Welcome. I am delighted to share with you self-awareness, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual through new thought, exploring relationships, health and healing, true prosperity, and metaphysics. These topics embrace transpersonal psychology, realizing that we are more than bodies, minds, inherited tendencies, genes, conditioning, or programming. Transpersonal psychology goes beyond the persona, meaning going beyond. We are spiritual beings going through a human experience. The topics were recorded in front of a live audience at the Victoria Center for Self-Awareness, where I was the founder, then the director, for 25 years.
After the meditation, we'll have a few moments of silence to envision world healing, world peace, and having food and water distributed to all on our planet. We also hold at that time in silence after our centering the heads of government worldwide, that they make their decisions out of the power of love rather than the love of power. Noticing your thoughts, releasing any thought of the future or the past, presencing yourself to right now. Envision silver white light moving up your spinal pathway, like a spinning silver disc, all the way up through the back of your neck, the back of your head, and the top of your head. Focusing your attention at the point between your eyebrows. Know that I speak these words for me and for you in the I person. There is one presence, one power, one God. It is the fullness of wisdom and intelligence. It is creativity itself and unconditional love. Being omnipresent, it expresses not only around me, but in me, through me, and as me now. Today, this morning, this very moment, I am ready for a wake-up call to intentionally create my day and my life. I willingly think and feel and intend and sense at a new level. I embrace ideas and questions that could shift me from littleness to magnitude. The questions and answers don't do it as much as the application in my life. The application in my life empowers me to go for it in every and any area of my life. I acknowledge that I am a manifester. I no longer manifest a narrow range. I am no longer a hostage to ego. I am a host to God. This realization is a birth in me, awakening to greater grandeur. I'm thankful for this conscious realization this morning. I'm thankful for each person present here this morning in spiritual community. I'm thankful for our world and universe and my relationship to them. Most of all, I'm thankful for life itself. Thank you. My topic this morning is Go For It. I don't know how many of you knew what the topic was ahead of time, but I want to ask you a question. If somebody were to say that to you, or you would like somebody to say that to you, what would your it be? What would your it be? I bet if we asked everyone in the room, there'd probably be as many different answers as there are people in the room. It could be anything, whether it's something physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, growth, going for it as far as health, relationships, career, starting something new, especially if it, you know, might be a little bit frightening at times, maybe a move, maybe just going up and speaking to someone. So you look in your life, not only here during the service, but as the days unfold during the week, what would you like to say, somebody say to you, go for it, as far as like a real support for you, not, you want to do what? You want to do what? I'm sure some of us have heard that one. So my purpose is threefold. First of all, I want us to look at a few questions that the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know, asks us to look at, and some ideas for us to look at, and also hopefully apply them in our life. Number two is to let go of littleness and move into magnitude. And number three is actually question two, how would our life be if we really thought of ourselves as geniuses? Now that might be pretty outlandish to some of you. But it's a new thought maybe for some of you. As geniuses. And that'll unfold as the topic unfolds. Many of you know I was away a couple of weekends ago to Vancouver, and they actually had 500 people attending a workshop on What the Bleep Do We Know movie with one of the directors. There were three directors. Mark Vicente was there, and about five or six of the other people that are interviewed at the end of the movie, and many of them are quantum physicists. All of them were PhDs, and also someone who wasn't on the movie, Adam, the healer from Vancouver, was there too. Amazing man. So this is a growing genre in spiritual films. It was a box office winner week after week. And I thought it was very interesting that most of our Victorian newspapers didn't give it a very good review. Did some of you notice that? I'm going to read to you what one person said, because this, I think, is an amazing film. Unless you're a New Age fanatic looking for a holistic alternative to an acid trip or obsessed with the meaning of life, chances are you'll be saying, what the bleep was it about? If you can make it through the 108 minutes of this superficial mini-drama about a miscontented woman's search for inner peace, etc., etc., well, you don't always need to believe what you read in the newspapers, right? And sometimes I have to admit that I do read the reviews. But William Arntz, A-R-N-T-Z, he was the producer and one of the directors. He calls it a hybrid of document and fiction, science and mysticism, visual effects and animation, a dramatic story and education about quantum physics. And most people find it brilliant, funny, deep, and definitely mind-bending. It's about presenting ideas to have people think about their life and opening up ideas for people to examine their lives and to think about themselves, to think about the patterns that they have. was interesting that many of the theaters that were showing it had to place it farther apart, because you know what would happen is that after the movie, people would sit there and they turn around and want to discuss it. The convergence of spirituality and science, a spiritual inquiry such as what is the nature of reality and the concept that we do create our reality, applying it to our everyday lives. And when we apply it to our everyday lives, we can actually have tremendous shifts and quantum changes in our own life. It's really making a statement that we can no longer be victims, if that's any of the acts that we have been pulling, and taking responsibility for our life and for all of our actions. You see, a lot of people have bought into the idea that they don't have control in their life. And they only see what they believe is possible. You know, like, when I see it, I'll believe it. Instead of realizing that when they stand in the possibility and envision it and speak about it and get emotionally involved in it and affirm it, that actually creates a reality. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but there is a period of incubation. So it's really a wake-up call for all of us to intentionally create what we really want in our life. You know, I've spoken so many times about intention. You know, it alters our reality, it creates invention, and it engenders results. It engenders results. Matter obeys the intent of consciousness. I've said that so many times here. I remember 20 years ago when we started the center, and I would make statements similar to that. There'd be people in the audience, and we had quite a number of people coming when we were at the university, and people would go, "Did you hear what she said?" Like, it was really a new thought to a lot of people. Now what I find is a lot of people come, and they come for the affirmation of it. They come to be reminded, because it is so much in the realm of even movies, spiritual cinema that we offer once a month here at the center, and of course wonderful books and etc. So just a reminder too that when we talk about visualization is focused intention. So it's also to get more than just your mind and your thoughts and your speaking involved. It's to actually envision and see the picture of what it is we want to create in our life. One of the presenters, and it was actually why I decided to go, because when I read that he was going to be there, I wanted to take in the whole weekend. And it was because of some of the things he said interspersed in the movie. And it was Michael Ledwith. He's Irish, so it's without the H in it, PhD. I want to tell you a little bit about his credentials. And a little bit through his topic, he gave us more credentials that people were just like this. Because a lot of times people, even sometimes speakers that are featured speakers or keynote speakers, sometimes we sit there and listen and we think, like that. But if we hear their credentials, then we may have a little bit more of a listening ear to it. So I'll just tell you a little bit about him. He's a professor of systematic theology. This is not going to be about religion. This is spirituality here. But he is the professor of systematic theology at Maynooth College in Ireland and has been the president of the university, was a member of the International Theological Commission charged with advising the Holy See on theological matters. So does that give you a little bit of credence to a couple of things that I want to share with you, what he had to say? His topic title was After the Bleep and the Da Vinci Code, The Real Life of Jesus. I spoke to him after the sometime after the topic, and I said, I want you to come to Victoria. And he said, I'll come. So the board is going to be making a decision soon, and I've got an email out to someone who looks after his itineraries and his schedules. He made this statement. All of us are manifestors. However, we've been manifesting at an extremely narrow range. Jesus the Christ, Buddha, and the wino under the bridge are all manifestors. The distinctions are some manifest at extremely narrow ranges, and some manifest at extremely wide ranges. Very important statement here, and I'm quoting. How we think of God, and here at the center, sometimes we call it infinite presence and power, the force, it's many words, but he's saying how we think of God will affect how we live our life and will affect our immortal destiny. You know, and here we say that we are spiritual beings, we're soul, and at the soul level, we are eternal. And that life isn't the opposite to death, birth is the opposite to death. Life is eternal. Back to what he said. He spoke a lot about the life of Jesus in the time that we don't know about from the Bible. Now, this is a very learned man, and he's studied immensely on this subject. And he said, we are sold heavily edited version of Jesus' life. And you know, here at the center, we don't talk a lot about Jesus. We talk about the Christ consciousness. That is the consciousness that expresses with no barriers to its full self-expression and the love at the core that we are. Right? He made one statement, and I'll just kind of leave it with you. Did you know that Jesus had a twin? His name was Thomas. How many of us knew that here? We're sold a heavily edited version. And he spoke very much about the years, those 18 years that are missing, of how he became a Christ. Christ wasn't his last name when he was born. It was a label given to him because of the consciousness that he portrayed. All right. So let's get back to that movie of Amanda. Amanda in the movie has a wake-up call, and a defining moment in her life is when she realizes that her husband has been the infidelity of her husband. However, that becomes like a hook in the wall for her. You know, can any of you relate to this? And I'm not speaking about husbands or wives that that cheat. And maybe some of you are sitting there, have experienced that or whatever. But how many of us have something happen to us that becomes a defining moment in our life? And it isn't such a defining moment that it's absolutely wonderful. It becomes like a defining moment that whenever something happens or we see something or we think we know what's happening or we assume, we go like that hook in the wall, and that defining moment superimposes itself into our consciousness, and we say, oh, I know what that's like. And of course, there's a little bit in there about how she thinks that the groom is being unfaithful to the bride right there at the reception. And of course, she realizes a little later on that she's not accurate about that. But it's not only about Amanda. There's lots of metaphors and inner meanings in the movie. Remember the roommate, Jennifer? Now, some of you haven't seen the movie. We do have it for rent here, and it is out for rent at the different video stores, too. Amanda is a metaphor
for us to realize that we draw people to our lives that are parts of ourself that we may have repressed. Do you remember Amanda in there? She's walking on paint on the floor, you know, doing a drawing, and she's having fun. And Amanda is not having fun. She's not having fun. So people in our lives can reveal to us what we need to deal with or what we need to recapture. So for Amanda, it was like recapture her playfulness and deal with repressed grief and deal with self-hating. And if you remember the shift in consciousness with Amanda, the beginning of the movie and then how she is about herself and her body at the end of the movie. And then, of course, something I really enjoyed was the Polish wedding. The Polish wedding. Well, I have both my parents are Polish. So I could really relate to that one. And I could also relate to some of the funny things in there also. It was filled with symbolism and metaphor. There was a line that kept repeating throughout it, and it was Dr. Joe Dispenza, who was actually at the conference that I was at, and I'm quoting here, "The mind does not know the difference between what it sees and what it remembers and what it imagines." Now, for most of you, that's not a new thought. Our brain records 400 billion pieces of information a second. A second, not a minute or a day. Our brain records 400 billion bytes of information per second. However, we are aware of only 2,000 bits of information per second. I was even floored by that. I thought, gee, I didn't know I was aware of that. Like that. So sometimes we think we know something, and intrinsically at the soul level, we're whole, complete, perfect, spiritual, and divine. And tying into the topic that I addressed last week about guidance, seeing the dance in guidance, that there is that intrinsic knowledge within us, but somehow it doesn't get up to our conscious level that often, or we have these intuitive flashes when we know. But sometimes we think we know, like we've been programmed, or there's been a defining moment, or there's been a traumatic event. We say, well, I know where they're going, or I know what's going to happen there. And we really don't know. There's a lot we know. There's a lot we know that we know. And there's far more that we don't know that we don't even know it. So I want to leave the Bleep movie for a while and see how this kind of ties into A Course in Miracles, which the center has been presenting for many years, and why we present it. Just recently, in one of the lessons, there was quite a bit in the chapter about littleness versus magnitude, and it's asking us to not be content with littleness. So my question to myself is, and my question to you is there any area in your life that we're still playing a little small? That we're kind of stuck in littleness? Your choice is your evaluation of yourself. I'm still quoting from A Course in Miracles. You will be content only in magnitude, which is your home. I saw a little quotation, and I don't know who wrote it, but I thought it was apropos for right in here. Home is not a place, but a passion. Not where one lives, but where one feels most alive. Is that right? Yeah. So getting back to here. You will be content only in your magnitude, which is your home. Every decision you make stems from what you think you are and represents the value that you put on yourself. You do not have to strive for magnitude because you already are it. Some of us aren't aware that it is we are. To hold your magnitude in perfect awareness in a world of littleness is a task the little cannot undertake. I'm going to read that sentence again. To hold your magnitude in perfect awareness in a world of littleness is a task the little cannot undertake. Yet it is asked of you. We've got some big challenges in this world. And if it's not you, who? If it's not me, who? If it's not people that will arrange their life to place themselves into an environment that's conducive to remembering who they are as spiritual beings, to realizing that we can have peace on earth and it begins with us, who? Mm-hmm. Yet it is asked of you in tribute of your magnitude and not of your littleness. God is not willing that you be content with less than everything. Question, and I said this in the meditation, would you be hostage to your ego or host to God? Or host to that infinite presence and power, whatever you want to call it. Let this be a question that you ask every day when you make your decisions. And then another powerful statement, neither give littleness nor accept it. How many times do some people play small with us, or they say something that, like, you know that's not who they are. Don't accept that for you. I accept something bigger than that for you, we could say. Not in an unkind way or a guilting way, but I see you as bigger than that. And then this is the completion of this portion of the paragraph. My birth in you is your awakening to grandeur. Welcome me not into a manger, but into the altar of holiness. That's the spiritual self that you really are, intrinsically. Intrinsically. So another good question to ask, and I don't ask you any of these questions without first asking myself and really listening and, you know, doing some journaling and maybe, you know, writing some things that I want to be, do, and have at another level. How many new experiences have you had lately? How many new experiences have you had lately? And you know, sometimes when we think of, you know, going for it, or maybe there's another level of expression that we're maybe hiding behind because of fear. And you know, I like to use acronyms, and I don't know where this came from, but I've been using it for years. Fear is false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. Well, there's another one that I was just introduced to, and that is feeling excited and ready. You know, I remember one of my teachers many years ago about speaking about public speaking. And he said, yeah, you're going to have butterflies, but they'll fly in formation. Yeah. Most people ask me, am I ever nervous speaking in front of people? I've spoken in front of thousands of people, and I have not taken speaking lessons. And I was only a little bit nervous once. You want to know when? When my spiritual mentor who ordained me was in the audience. And I just really had to tell my butterflies to get into formation then. You know, but it's feeling excited and ready. Feeling excited and ready. Do you know, many of us have heard this spoken a different way, but I was amazed that this saying is so old. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but maybe Ray will tell me how to pronounce it later on, because he usually knows the correct pronunciation of some of these things. Epictetus. Epictetus. He lived from 55 to 135. It's a long time ago. He said, and he's saying men, but we'll say men and women, quote, are disturbed not by things that happen, but by their opinions of the things that happen. We've read that, and so many psychologists have said that over and over again. All right. So how would your life be if you had a new thought about yourself, and if you thought of yourself as a genius in that area that you really want to go for it? How would your life be? I remember Marianne Williamson in one of her first books that she wrote, and I think Nelson Mandela used parts of it. She said, and I'm quoting, our deepest fear isn't that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. I'm going to be starting a 5-week series on Sunday for Sunday celebration, the day of our birthday on September the 18th. And it's out of Marianne Williamson's newest book, and I think it's it's her best book yet. It's an incredible book. It's called The Gift of Change. And you know, we've talked about change a lot at the center, but hey, you know, she's talking it from a realm of, you know, we've really got to get on it as far as having shifts in our awareness and consciousness if we are to have a healthy planet, and if we're not to have the kinds of wars that we're having and the kinds of challenges that we're having worldwide. This is a quotation from this new book. It is not okay to be stuck in smallness of our narcissism when our greatness is needed. Our greatness is needed. Now, sometimes you might think about that and think, well, I'm not an orator, I don't lead No, that's not that. It's like your greatness in your music is needed. Your greatness in your voice is needed. Your greatness in your piano playing is needed. Your greatness. There's parts of you that maybe you just haven't gone to yet, but that are crying to come out and really, 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 really want your support. Don't look in your program right now, but you have two little inserts that I hope can assist you in your shifts in consciousness and going for it, and that's, if it is to be, it's up to me. And then the other one that just, you can fold like this and have it sitting on your desk. And this is from Paramahansa Yogananda. Trust yourself. Trust yourself, the self that you really are, a spiritual being. Bless the moment. See the good in it. See what you can acknowledge and be grateful for in the moment. And then what? Expect the best. Our highest good is assured. If we have that as our intention. But not like, oh God, I knew that was going to happen. Then we wonder why it happened. It's very simple. Again, Joe Dispenza is a doctor of chiropractic, and he majored in biochemistry, and he's continuing his education in neurology and neurophysiology and brain function. He said, if I change my mind, will I change my choices? If I change my choices, will my life change? Will it? Yes, absolutely yes. He has he speaks very little of it in the little interviews, but he talks about, I create my day, and I want to just share this. this with you in closing. I wake up in the morning and I consciously create my day the way I want it to happen. Now, sometimes, because my mind is examining all the things that I need to get done, I know that one, it takes me a little bit to get to settle down and get to the point to where I'm actually intending creating my day. But here's the thing. When I create the day, and out of nowness, little things happen that are so unexplainable. I know that they are the process of the result of my creation. And the more I do it, the more I build a neural net in my brain that I accept that it is possible. It gives me the power and the incentive to do it the next day. So if we're consciously designing our destiny, if we're consciously, from a spiritual standpoint, throwing out what idea that our thoughts can affect our reality or affect our life because reality equals life, then I have this little pact that I have when I create my day. And I just love this. He says, I say, I'm taking this time to create my day, and I'm interfacing with the quantum field. Now it is, in fact, the observer watching me the whole time that I'm doing this. And there is a spiritual aspect to myself. Then, show me a sign today that you paid attention to any of the things I created and bring them in a way that I won't expect. So I'm as surprised at the ability to be able to experience these things and make it so that I have no doubt that it's coming from you. So I live my life, in a sense, all day long, thinking about being a genius or thinking about being the glory and the power of God or thinking about being unconditional love. I love that. So I want to tie this into what Dr. Deepak Chopra, who was one of our guests years ago, we brought him to the center twice before he became so popular. But one of his first books that was so popular was Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. Remember that? And then one of the steps he's talking about, five steps in the law of intention and desire. He says, slip into the gap, the silence between our thoughts. So I have an acronym for GAP. God's absolute presence. Now, God being present everywhere, fine. But the gap is we're consciously aware of God's absolute presence and we're not thinking about the future, dwelling on the past. We slip into the gap. We release our intention and desire. We remain in self-referral. What's that? Remembering who we really are. We relinquish any attachment to the outcome. The attachment to the outcome doesn't say you shouldn't have an outcome in mind. It's the attachment. And you let the universe handle the end. Wow. So thank you for your listening here this morning. I've kind of combined what the bleep, quantum physics, A Course in Miracles. What else? Deepak Chopra, but you know what? They're all saying very much the same thing about that we can create our reality as far as, especially if we're conscious creators. Next week's topic is, I think it's co-creation. What is it? So we'll tie that in nicely. God presence and power within me acknowledges and salutes God's presence and power in each and every one of you. That is the translation of namaste. So I say namaste to you. Thank you.